We're very glad you're with us today, and we welcome you to the services here at Veterans Parkway, and appreciate your being here. We have guests with us from near the area, and others perhaps who are with family over the holidays, and some of that's already started because some of our people have already gone, and so that'll probably be happening for the next couple of weeks, I suppose. But we are really glad to have you in the assembly this morning, and thank each of you for participating and being a part of our gathering today. Open your Bibles, if you will, to Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. My guess is you already know this particular one verse in Proverbs by memory. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Parents, I want to ask you a question. Did you ever think it would be this hard? I mean, back before you ever had kids, remember back when you used to watch other people's kids? Remember back when you were raising imaginary kids? Remember back when you would say things like, I'll never let my kids do that. Remember those days? It was so easy back then. It reminds me of a picture I saw of a woman who is driving down the street of a very upscale housing development. She is in a shiny little sports car, and obviously she is dressed up to go to work. She is, as she drives, looking in the mirror and applying her makeup. Her face is filled with an air of sophistication. And unfortunately, what she does not know is that on the top of her shiny little sports car is a steaming cup of hot coffee that she had poured when she got in a few moments before. And the caption in the picture says, confidence is what you have before you understand the situation. Raising children is kind of like that. And those who have been there and done that, and those who are doing that now, understand one thing. It is the toughest job in the world. And it is not for the faint of heart. Mark Twain had a simple philosophy on raising kids. This is what he said. Quote, things run along pretty smoothly until your kid reaches 13. And that's the time you need to stick them in a barrel. Hammer the lid down nice and snug and feed them through a knot hole. And then about the time he turns 16, plug up the knot hole. You know what that says to me about Mark Twain? He was into fiction. First of all, in a teenager, you're talking about a creature who can consume an entire refrigerator worth of food in about 10 minutes. He's not going to survive the knot hole routine. And the second thing, Twain's premise is flawed. Things don't, quote, run along smoothly until they reach the age of 13. One mom described her little boy as a human jet engine who never stops. Another said, trying to get my child to hold still is like nailing Jell-O to a tree. And another mom said, God made Adam out of the dust of the ground. When he made my kid, he added electricity. Parenting is not easy. It is exasperating. It is exhausting. It is at times humiliating. That's why I say it is the toughest job in the world. Someone asked one mom, would you have kids again? And her answer was, yes, but not the same ones. So there you are. You have your notes this morning in our bulletin. We always put the notes for the lesson. And there's three things I'll share with you just to start. Three truths. Number one, this is a tough subject. This is a tough subject. I mean, think about this. Who is allowed to talk about this and when? If you're younger and you don't have any kids, you think people are going to listen? They're not. If you're older and your kids are grown and gone, people sit there and go, well, that may have worked in your day, but you don't understand how hard it is in our day. Or if you're in the middle ground somewhere and you still have kids at home that you are raising, the problem there is everybody can see your imperfections and they can see you and your kids. And so as a result, you don't feel that qualified to talk about it. So as a result, I'm not sure we talk about it very often. Because nobody ever really feels qualified to talk about it. It's a tough subject. Secondly, it is a touchy subject. There are conflicting opinions about child raising all over the place. Everybody has a theory. And I tell you what you do. Post your opinion about something on the subject of child raising. Post that on social media. And then you better jump back. Because, I mean, the opinions are going to fly. The comments are going to fly. And there's a lot of good stuff out there on parenting. There's a lot of bad stuff, too. It's a touchy subject. Third, it is a timely subject. I mean, as you look around our assemblies from time to time, you see that we have a lot of kids and a lot of younger parents. I haven't run the statistics. I'm going to guess that probably 50% or more of an average audience in this auditorium, in the makeup of this congregation, are children who are still living at home all the way from babies, all the way through college, of kids who are commuting back and forth. We have a lot of young families, and some families are doing a great job. But I'm going to guess that every family struggles, and every family has some frustrations along the way. And if any group of people needs some encouragement, it's young families. It's families still trying to teach and train their kids. It's not easy. Especially in this culture. This is a hard time for moms and dads who are trying to help our kids find their own faith in God. I mean, the breakdown of the family in our culture is staggering. And relationships that should be very strong and very stable are not always the case. And I suppose the best kept secret in this church just may be the family pressures under your roof. But the second best kept secret may be that you're not the only one. So let's not pretend that any one of us have got all the answers, or that we've just got it all together all the time about this. So let's go back to this one verse in Proverbs 22 and verse 6 that we think we know. I mean, we've read it hundreds of times. But here's the deal. Have you ever stopped and lingered long enough on the verse to actually digest what it says? I've heard people who look at this verse and their conclusion is, well, that just means you got to take your kids to church and you got to tell them about God and maybe teach them a few prayers and, I don't know, hope for the best. I don't think that's what this verse says. I think it says more than that. So I know it's going to come as a shock, but I got 3 points. But they're not mine, they're Solomon's. Solomon makes 3 points in one verse. Number one, look at your note. He talks about the nature of this training business. The nature of this training. He says, train up a child. Historically, he is painting for us a word picture. A word picture that is descriptive of the ancient Hebrews and the midwives who would come in and assist with the birth of a baby. And after the baby was born, the midwife would take the tip of a finger and she would place on the tip of her finger some crushed dates or grapes, and then she would take the tip of that finger with that concoction and then she would massage the mouth of the baby. And that tangy, tart taste
would cause that little child to sort of draw back and pucker? What's the midwife doing? She is creating a desire in that little baby to nurse at her mother. You know what that says? That says parents have the responsibility from God to create the desire in our children for the things of God. And when do you start that? Well, you start that at the earliest of ages. Because if mom and dad don't hunger and thirst after righteousness, your child probably isn't going to either. If mom and dad are not faithful, that is filled with faith, how can you expect your kids to have what you don't have? If mom and dad do not prioritize spiritual things, how can you expect your kids to do the same? Now, it's easy as parents to come along and tell our kids, now you need to do this and do that and don't do that and don't do that and tell our kids all day long. But what if our telling and yelling doesn't match up with the personal example of a God-led life? Well, the word is hypocrisy. And our kids can spot that. In Colossians, the third chapter in verse 21, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21, Paul writes to fathers and he calls us out and he says, "Fathers," the New American Standard says, "do not exasperate your children." Why? Because they'll lose heart. They will lose heart. And one of the ways our children will lose heart is if we as their parents tell them one thing and we go and do another. In the sixth chapter of Deuteronomy, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, look what Moses said to these parents. And I mean, you talk about information, a challenge that's equally ours. Here it is. Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 1. "Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the judgments, which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you." I want you to look at that. Moses says, "God has commanded me to teach you these things." What things? Verse 2, "so that you and your son and your grandson," three generations, "might fear the Lord your God to keep all His statutes and His commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged." Verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. You, parents, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your might. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart." First responsibility is to parents. You have to live the message you proclaim. You have to walk your talk. And then, only then, verse 7, "you shall teach them diligently to your sons. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead." And he says in verse 9, "even write them on the doorpost of your house and on the gates." You know, it's interesting to me, and we don't have time, but over in chapter 11 of Deuteronomy, verses 18, 19, and 20, he says the same thing all over again. Why? Because obviously repetition is the key to learning. And Moses gives this command twice. And the message of Moses is to these Israelite Hebrew families, you're going to move into a land in which you're going to be surrounded by a Canaanite culture. Do not let the Canaanite culture capture the heart of your kids. Well, guess what? We are surrounded by a Canaanite culture. And it's not easy raising a godly family. And the best way to counteract is to start early. In Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 14, in Hebrews the 5th chapter and verse 14, he says, "solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil." He uses the word train there. Train up a child. train. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 11, same thing. He says, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained, there's the word. Those who have been trained by it, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Ephesians 6 and verse 4 that was read moments ago. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Training is the idea. And dads aren't the only one. And when Paul writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 1, and then again in chapter 3, he talks about Timothy's mother and grandmother, and he says, from the time you were a child, you have learned the sacred writings. You have learned Scripture. Where did he learn it? From his mother and grandmother. Training starts when our kids are little. There is a brief window of opportunity in which you and I as moms and dads can make a serious impression, and you better make a good one. The nature of the training to create that desire. Secondly, look at the duration of the training. The duration of the training. Train up a child. The Hebrew word child, it's interesting, is used in various ages and stages of growth and development. Sometimes the word child references a little baby. Sometimes the word child represents a teenager. Joseph was 17 years old, and that word is used about him in the book of Genesis. The point is, as long as your offspring live beneath your roof, you have a job, you have a duty to teach and to train. And even after that, there will still be opportunities to teach and to train and to advise and to mentor and to counsel. Now, there's a couple extremes I'll notice for you. Extreme number one, some people, as their kids grow up and older, some people turn too loose too soon. I've known parents, when their kids hit the teenage years, the attitude kind of kicks in. Well, let's see if they can fly. And they can't. If ever a child needs even more attention and direction and a steady hand of authority and leadership and responsibility and mentoring and accountability, it's when they hit those teenage years. Parents, if you think your mettle is being tested by a toddler, you just wait till they hit the teen years. No matter what kind of batting average you had before, when adolescence kicks in, it's a whole new ballgame. We've raised boys and girls. And I'll tell you what I've learned. Boys, I can kind of figure out. Because I'm one. I kind of know how they think. Girls are sneaky. Girls are sneaky. And sometimes they're really hard to figure out. But the point is, when they hit the teen years, you don't just give them a blank check. Your parenting isn't over. It's just now shifted into overdrive. And you have to shift. You have to stay engaged. Raising children is kind of like flying a kite. If you let out too much string too soon, it's not going to catch the updraft. It's going to crash. If you never let out enough string, it will never soar on its own. So there's a balance in all of this. And so we have to learn to balance flexibility with firmness. And then an amazing thing happens. As time marches on, you transition into a relationship of friendship. But it doesn't happen until the days of training are over. And I'll tell you when it kicks in is when your kids have kids. When your daughter calls you on the phone one day and says these words, "Dad, something scary happened today. I heard myself telling my kid what you used to tell me. I sound like you." And by the way, you never stop being a parent. And the second extreme is some never turn loose at all. They never turn loose at all. They are the smother mothers. They are the helicopter parents. They are the parents who are always on call for one reason, to swoop down and rescue their children. Because after all, my child might experience some kind of failure and I have to bail them out. By the way, those are the parents in the front office of every school every morning. And they're the same ones because they're bringing lunches and they're bringing homework and they're bringing money. They're bringing all the things that little Junior or Susie forgot that morning. They are the 911 emergency response team. And their duty as a parent, they think, is to hover and protect. But here's the question. What if there's no emergency? Then you got a problem. Because how will our children ever learn accountability if you don't teach them accountability? You know, honey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you forgot your homework. You know, what steps do you think you could take the next time to make sure that doesn't happen again? What are you doing? You're teaching responsibility and accountability. The sad thing is there are kids who grow up and break the speed limit all the time because dad's going to swoop in and pay the fine. Or here comes mom to the rescue. But the truth is you're not always going to be around to rescue them. And then what's going to happen? Because as our kids grow up and enter into the real world of adulthood, they learn a pretty hard lesson. There's no grand helicopter parent in the sky who's just going to sweep down and pay off all their bounced checks or to keep them, help them keep them in a job or bail them out of jail. We hurt our children sometimes in the name of love by stealing from them the opportunities that they have to learn about life. The nature of the training, the duration of the training, and the implementation of the training. Train up a child in the way he should go. Where's Ryan? To be continued. Tonight. Let me close with this, and I think some of you can appreciate this, identify with something similar. This writer says, I'll never forget the mom who had been cooped up with her toddler for several weeks, and in a desperate effort to get out of the house, she decided to take her little boy to a Muppet movie, his very first. As soon as they arrived in the theater, the mother discovered a minor technicality. The child didn't weigh enough to keep the spring-loaded seat down. There was nothing left to do but hold this churning, squirming 2-year-old on her lap through the whole movie. It was a mistake. Sometime during the next 2 hours, they lost control of a large Coke and a king-sized box of buttered popcorn. The gooey mixture flowed over the child onto the mother's lap and down her legs. She decided to sit it out since the movie was almost over, but what she did not know, however, was that she and her son were being systematically cemented together. When the movie was over, they stood up, and the mother's wrap-around skirt became unwrapped. It stuck to the bottom of her little toddler and followed him as he ran up the aisle. She stood there clutching her slip and thanking the good Lord she had taken the time to put one on. It's tough being a parent. And I'm guessing we could go around the room this morning and all of us could tell some stories of horror and humiliation. Times in which we could hug our kids and wring their neck all at the same time. But that's part of being a parent. And it's just stuff to go through. Parents take love. It takes a lot of logic. But most of all, it takes a lot of God. And that's where we'll leave it this morning. We sing the song of invitation, if you're not a Christian. You know, it is interesting, the Bible talks about being a Christian, but he puts it in terms often of a family relationship. He talks about the new birth. The new birth. Unless a man is born again, he cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. If you've never been born again, if you've never come to terms with the gospel, if you've never been buried in baptism for the remission of your sins per the instruction of Jesus Himself, Why don't you do that today? Can we help you in some way? Can we encourage you in some way? Because what you have here is a family. You have a spiritual family. And we want everybody to be a part and everybody to work to help each other go to heaven. If we can help you this morning, why don't you come while we stand in.